Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to our first segment of the Weekend Wrap for 2018. We're going to go over a few fights talk about some of the upcoming fights, as well as some of the action in 2017. We already have Mr. Lomachenko named Fighter of the Year. We're going to talk about that. Also, a little bit about the bout coming up between Lipinets and Garcia. It's now been postponed until, I believe it's March 10th. But right now, let's get the Iceman on the line and see what's going on with him this year. His switch for us a little slow, but co-host, Mr. Jabron Clement. Jabron, how have you been?
Doing good, JK, doing good. Can't complain.
Well, you happen to break this first news about the Danny Garcia fight. You want to tell us a little bit more about what's happening with Lipinets' hands?
With, say that again. You said Danny Garcia?
Mikey.
Oh, Mikey Garcia. Oh, they rescheduled the fight. Now is going to be pushed back to March the 10th instead of in February.
Oh, and we also have Scully here on the line. Scully, how have you been?
I'm pretty good. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're doing great, Scully. I imagine you're getting ready to go back up to the Hall of Fame now that the class has been announced.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely be there this year. Actually, I'm looking into renting a house up there for the weekend, for like 4 days. I found out they actually have a beach up there a couple exits away, and some of the guys go up there and they rent houses right on the beach. So I think I might get a group of guys together and take that route this year.
Oh, okay. And what did you think about this year's class?
I mean, I didn't see the whole list. Who refresh my memory? Who was the main couple guys?
I think it's Vladimir, two sports writers. Jim Gray is one. Jabron, did you catch the full list?
No, I didn't get to check the list.
I mean, obviously Vladimir is a good choice, and I think he's going to draw some people, and for better or worse, that's what I noticed about the Hall of Fame over the last, and maybe it's always been this way, but I notice it more lately. It seems like they're trying to, induct names as much or more than, fully 100% worthy people. It's a business, I guess, and they rely on people coming to the dinners and the golf outing on Sunday, and they rely on people to come to the gala they have on Saturday. So they need not just great fighters, but they need names, people that will draw. And you know, that's just what I noticed the last few years. You know, I'm not so sure if that's a good thing or not a good thing.
What did you think about that, Jabron, being somewhat of a boxing purist and seeing more and more non-boxing people being promoted into the highest realm of the sport?
Well, I mean, everybody plays some type of part. And that's with any sport, but just like Scully was saying, it's kind of basically getting more cool in a sense, you know, more about politics than actual, like he's saying, people that really deserve it. And that's, like I said, not just with boxing, that's with all sports. We see it every day, you know, it's no reason they should be debating if T.O. should be getting into the Hall of Fame, and hands down his work on the field. I don't care about a locker room. It's what he's done on the field that matters. So, you know, that's just the way of the world. That's what we live in. Everything is politics.
Yep.
I think the other one was Morales was also part of the three that they got in under boxers. It is kind of interesting the way things have really changed, and we seem to be getting more, as you say, names in instead of actual boxing names, I guess, or some of the names that I think maybe should have been in there a few years ago. You know, I mean, just as you mentioned, T.O. In football, there are guys that we could also think about in the Boxing Hall of Fame. It's been a pretty interesting 2017, and everyone kind of has their own pound for pound and fight of the year and knockout of the year and whatnot. They've already announced the fighter of the year, and that was Mr. Lomachenko. Jabron, you've been rather critical of Mr. Lomachenko. What did you think about the choice for him as Fighter of the Year?
I mean, I disagree with it, but, you know, everybody have their right to their own opinion, but that's just not my choice for pound for pound, Fighter of the Year.
And who would you pick?
I would have picked Terrence Crawford. Simply the fact that he cleaned out a division, undisputed, and now he's going to the 2018 year into a new weight class in a title fight against Jeff Horn here in April at Madison Square Garden, April 14th. Terrence Crawford. I mean, you're talking about Lomachenko. He won his fight. His first fight of the year, he beat a guy that was coming off a knockout loss. And then he fought Rigondeaux, which is a very technical fighter, but at the same time was moving up two weight divisions and only fighting, a couple of rounds in the last couple of years. So, I mean, if you want to say that's Fighter of the Year, then you go right ahead.
Now, Scully, you've kind of been on the other side. Lomachenko's a fighter that you really like. Do you agree with him being Fighter of the Year, or would you pick someone else?
Oh, I mean, I definitely like him. I mean, I don't know if Fight of the Year. I mean, you know, I don't know if he did enough to qualify for that. But you know, the I guess the thing is this, it's like there's a lot of guys who could qualify, you know, for Fight of the Year. You know, and maybe not a lot this year, but there's a couple. It's subjective. It's what you like. It's what you're interested in. You know, what impresses you more. You know, but Crawford. I mean, Crawford. If he didn't win it, I mean, he must have been right there in the running. I mean, I would hope that they would have had him as number two or three down the line at least. You know, but again, it kind of maybe goes back to the popularity thing. You know, similar to the Hall of Fame. You know, Lomachenko, his. You know, the interest that was in, and you know, and his whole thing with his style is very, you know, it's impressive and it's fun to watch. And you know, with the attention he drew, you know, maybe they're going by that, and maybe they're even swayed a little too much by somebody's attention as compared to what they actually did in the ring. You know, so it's very subjective, I guess, and part of it, I'll tell you another thing I do notice, and you know, and I hate to sound critical of people, but it is what it is. I notice, like with the Hall of Fame, and I'm sure it's very similar to whoever picks the Fighter of the Year. I notice with the Hall of Fame, I've seen the list at one point where they have the list of people who are the ones that pick the Fighter of the Year, and a lot of these guys are very young boxing writers. You know, they haven't been really in the game for a very long time. You know, and some of them, to be honest with you, I've researched a little bit out of them, and some of these guys, like, literally have not even been following boxing that long, you know, in their lives, and they're in charge of picking who goes into the Hall of Fame. So I think, you know, a lot of those old school guys have either retired or died off. So we don't have a lot of guys, as many guys as we did in previous years, that really have a grasp on boxing and a grasp on the history of the game and those type of things. So, you know, we're in the internet age, and there's guys who are in charge of, you know, they're in these positions. And the fact of the matter is, I know some of them personally. They just started watching boxing relatively recently, and the reason they even got a chance to be, you know, in that position is because they were on the internet and they contacted the guy who wrote a story, or a guy has a website, and they asked them if they could write for him. And with no credentials whatsoever, here they are writing, which is fine by me. If they know what they're doing, they'll last. But a lot of these guys are turning that into being put in positions where they're making important choices that affect the history of our game. And so in a trickle-down kind of way, you know, we're getting guys who are making important decisions, giving out awards and different things, that really might not be the most qualified people. Just because they're on the internet writing stories doesn't necessarily mean they're qualified to pick something that's going to last forever in terms of Hall of Fame and Fighters of the Year.
DeBron, do you think that perhaps Scully is too critical of the influx of youth and the impact of the social media on the sport and possibly the future history of boxing, you know, considering that, you know, I mean, you're a part of that age?
Well, yes, I am part of that age, but at the same time, I mean, I got common sense, you know, to know that I'm not gonna make judgment on something that I'm not fully knowledgeable of, and that's what happens in everyday life. I mean, you have people getting appointed positions and jobs just because they know someone. They work with someone at the place 10 years ago. They got a past relationship, but they don't know if they're qualified for that position, you know. So, no, Scully is not being too critical. I mean, that's a very valid point.
Stelly being homeschooled and having all the reunions and whatnot, even though you bring a lot of history back, and you've had, Gerard's been there and whatnot, do you find that there's not a lot of young writers that really cover these events and get to know some of these champions, unless they're really household names? Marvin Hagler, Mark Breland, but there are other guys that have contributed to the game just as much in their own right. Are your events covered by some of these younger writers?
You know what? I think most fans and most writers, they're geared more towards the big names, what I would call recognizable, people that really stand out to them. The thing is, I'll give you a very good example. I've discussed this with many boxing fans and boxing guys, writers and different things, about Floyd Mayweather. And whether you think Floyd's, the greatest of all time or not, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. But I get a lot of guys telling me, and not a lot, several, that tell me, like, Floyd's the best ever. And I'm saying, well, are you saying that because he says it and because he made the hats, TDE, or do you really believe that? And if you do, that would mean for you to judge that. Like really, really think about it. For me to say it's just a very simple statement. Floyd Mayweather is the best ever. Now, that's a very simple statement, but that constitutes a lot. That's a very deep statement, because for me to say you're the best ever, that means I know whatever the word ever means. I'm very familiar with the history. So I ask guys, okay, you think Floyd Mayweather is the best ever? That's fine. Do you know who Henry Armstrong is? Do you know who Roberto Duran is? And I'm not talking about Roberto Duran that fought Iron Barkley. I'm talking about the real Roberto Duran. I said, do you know who Nicolino Loche is? Do you know who these people are? Do you know who Kid Gavilan is? Do you know what Henry Armstrong achieved? Do you have any idea? More often than not, they don't. They do not. They absolutely do not. So you can't say so-and-so is the best ever if you don't know what ever constitutes, what that actually means. It would be similar to saying, LeBron James is the greatest basketball player in history. And I go, really? You ever seen Wilt Chamberlain? Who's that? Who's Wilt Chamberlain? Well, I at least want you to know who Wilt is first before you say that LeBron is the best. Or I want you to know Michael Jordan. I want you to know Magic Johnson. I want you to know Connie Hawkins. I want you to know who people are. But if you don't know and you just see LeBron and you say he's the greatest ever, your opinion really doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. So I think a lot of these guys are, and everybody's similar. Instinctively, you go for the star. Like if right now, if we were at an event and Floyd Mayweather was there, most people would gravitate to Floyd because he's the hottest guy right now. He's the hot guy. But I like a lot of some of these old school writers. They're very familiar with everybody in the room. They know who, Nicolino Loche. Think about that. I assume you guys know who he is, but, Nico Loche, if he was in a room with 100 modern boxing fans, the chances are the majority of them wouldn't even know who he was, wouldn't even give him a second look, wouldn't ask him for an autograph, wouldn't ask to take a picture with him. They wouldn't know who he is. So that kind of stuff is an issue for me. I'm not expecting everybody to be, Max Kellerman and know every fight and every date in history and know what the guy ate for breakfast, but I want you to have a very, very general sense of who's who and who's what. And, I think some of these guys that are on the committee that picks the Hall of Fame, I've researched a few of them just out of curiosity and, it's questionable if they're really qualified to tell who should be in the Hall of Fame or not.
What would you change as a younger member, Javon? If
there was something that you could directly do, I mean, what would you change? Would it be the education of the younger writers? Would it be, I mean, how would you go about possibly trying to solve this problem, or at least a part of it?
Well, it would have to be. Right now, I can't pinpoint how I want to put it together, but it'd be similar to like how music is, like how nowadays we listen to music that's on the radio, a lot of, you know, R&B, hip hop, or more modern music, but it's just old music being sampled and chopped and looped and played over again. You know what I'm saying? A producer took something old and made it something new. So I feel that maybe in the commentary with these writers and these guys on TV commentating the fights, they can implement a little bit of the old school, bring up some of the old fighters and say, well, oh, that reminds me of such and such style and this and thing, you know, things of that sort. That'll make the modern day person be like, well, they brought up that person. Let me Google this person's name and figure out who this person is. You know, maybe that could help bring a little more of the old school, so people will be more educated on of the sport, and then, you know, they won't just jump to conclusions and automatically grant somebody the greatest of all time. They'll be like, well, hold on, you know, you can't quickly crown somebody if you don't know their history.
Scully, did you get a chance to watch any of the fights this weekend? I know you're kind of busy and traveling and whatnot, but did you get a chance to watch any of the fights yesterday?
I did. I was actually at the Golden Gloves yesterday. You know, we've got our Golden Gloves tournament going on, so I was tied up with that yesterday.
Tell us a little bit about that. I know you. I mean, it's the height of the amateur season, and is there any young guys coming up that we should be looking for out of your part of the country?
Well, you know, I tell you what, on a darker note, let me say this. I assume you guys heard about Louis Rosa passing away last week. You know, he's a very talented featherweight. He just passed away last Sunday morning after car accident. His father actually won our Golden Glove. Lewis did when he was an amateur. And I was with his father last week at the Golden Gloves, and, you know, we talked, we hung out, and everybody fought, then we went home, and then when I got up the next morning, the news that his son had passed away. So they actually just had the funeral the other day, and so that was, you know, he was one of the brighter lights in our area, so I just felt like I needed to mention him. But, you know, we have our Golden Gloves going on, and, you know, we've got some talented kids in the area. I mean, basically, New England is broken up into four sections. So our local tournament will be over this coming Sunday, and then the winners will go to the New England tournament in February, and that's when the top dogs will come out of it, and we'll see who's going to the Nationals, and we'll see who's really really looking like something. So I've got a few more weeks to go before I'll really be able to pinpoint who's looking like the future.
I think we had a kid on the show that part of that New England process, Devin Haney.
I don't know him well. No, I know who he is, but I don't know if he's New England. Is he from New England? I'm not 100% sure. I believe where is he from? Do you know?
I thought it was Connecticut, maybe.
You know, he might be a transplant. He might have came here from from somewhere else. I was actually I just saw his name yesterday or the day before. Somebody's talking about him, but I'm not really familiar with him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I believe he's 7-0 with 5 knockouts, something like that. I was kind of looking at a replay of the Fortuna fight yesterday, and it seems to me, you know, this guy is a very good fighter, but he can't seem to make weight, whether it's up or down. I mean, I think yesterday he lost the fight purely because everyone knew that he couldn't win the title. Otherwise, I think he might have won that fight. But are you familiar with Fortuna? And once again, you know, we go back to fighters losing titles on the scale. I mean, are we starting this out again in 2018, Scully?
Yeah, it looks like I'm actually familiar with him because he does a lot of sparring in New England with different guys that I know, and if I'm not mistaken, I think he even did some boxing last year with Louis Rosa, who just passed away. But yeah, the weight thing is you know, it's funny when you see a guy and he loses the title on the scale, and one thing I've always said that I really, you don't hear many people mention, but when you go to a fight, you see a big fight, and then they tell you the night before the fight, they say, okay, so-and-so didn't make weight, so he can't win the title. You know, he only his opponent can win. This guy is basically disqualified from winning the championship. So whether it's his fault or not, that means basically his whole motivation to become a world champion in this fight that he's been training for the past 8 weeks or 6 weeks, whatever it is now down the tubes. It's literally erased from the equation. He can't become a world champion. You know, I have to imagine, like I say, whether it's his fault or not that he didn't make weight, I'd imagine it must be extremely hard to keep your motivation up and actually go and win the fight, because a huge part of your momentum is and your motivation is actually winning the title. So now you're losing a huge part of your actual motivation, and it may actually work in reverse where it, you know, totally deflates you and you feel like it's not even worth them anymore because, you know, you can't even be a world champion now. So these guys, you know, a lot of ramifications come with not making weight. You know, a lot of people blame the fighter and they blame the trainer. And I understand that, you know, some of these guys literally just cheat on their diet or they're not dedicated, they're not running enough or whatever. But one big factor, it's very prevalent, and you would think at this level it wouldn't be a factor at all. But I'll tell you one thing, a lot of guys, like the way we're different than other sports, like if you play for the Raiders, if you play for the New York Yankees, if you play for the, you know, Red Wings, any major league sport, you have several coaches, you have strength coaches, you have people who are on the case. They handle everything. They handle your food, they handle your medication, they handle your tapes, they handle your equipment, they carry your bags, they do everything for you. In boxing, we're on our own, like regardless of what it is, world champions or preliminary fighter, like we do our own thing. And so when you hear about a guy checking his weight, and it's okay, they're monitoring the champ's weight, all that means is his coach is putting him on a scale that's in the gym that may or may not even be accurate. I've seen guys weigh in. I've seen more than I could count. Guys won't make weight. They'll be 3 pounds over, and they'll go, oh, man, but the scale in my gym says I'm 1 pound under. I've been weighing on it for the last 6 weeks. You know, so most guys, they weigh on a scale that may or may not be accurate. They use their bathroom scale. They use a scale at a doctor's office. So it stands to reason that more than a few times in history, the scale at the gym and the scale that they use at the fights are two different scales. They're registering different weights. I've seen guys get on scales and be 6 pounds over and go, no, check it again. I weigh 2 pounds under. And they swear they're 2 pounds under, but the scale at the weigh-in, you know. So there's unfortunately, there's no universal scale that we can all use. We use. I've seen fights, pro fights. Guys have used bathroom scales. They didn't. The commission didn't have an actual scale, so somebody brought a bathroom scale that their mom uses to monitor her weight, and they bring and use that. So, you know, that's a part of boxing that really needs to be fixed. I mean, you can go to different, depending on what state you're in. You could see one state will use a medical doctor scale. I've seen other states use a bathroom scale. I've seen them use, you know, digital scales. I mean, just you'd be surprised. It's very unorganized and unregulated as far as what we weigh in on. And I think that's a big issue with professional boxing as well.
That might be something that we can explore at another show. But Scotty, I know you're very limited with time, so why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media and give us your final thoughts for the evening.
Well, I'm always on John the Iceman Scully or Iceman John Scully, my two different pages on Facebook. Lots of boxing talk on there every day. I'm on Twitter, Ice John Scully, and Instagram, Ice John Scully. And I'm just keeping busy. I'm working on getting something going with I'm involved with USA Boxing. They've latched on to my reunion idea, and now we're in the process of building our alumni association throughout the United States with all former amateur boxers. And just in the last month or so, I mean, we've had we've got Marlon Starling signed up. I'm trying to get Nicky Pazienza. I had Paul Gonzalez sign up, but I assume you guys heard he got himself into a little bit of legal trouble. But we have Paul, we have Virgil Hill, quite a few guys. So my next reunions are going to be way better than anything I've ever done. Now we're going to have really, really good connections, and we're gonna really have big reunions from now on.
Well, hopefully, Jabron, you'll be able to get to a few of those. Maybe when you come back out here to Vegas or maybe the West Coast, Scully, we can hook up also. But thank you so much for your time, my man, and look forward to talking to you soon, hopefully next week.
All right, fellas. Thank you for having me, and I'll talk to you guys next week for sure. All right?
All right.
All right, boys. Be good. All right.
Well, we got about 28 minutes or so here. Jabron, let's talk about some of yesterday's action. I'm not sure whether you got a chance to see the complete undercard yesterday, but we did have a couple other fights, and one of them, actually both of them, turned out to be pretty good. We've seen Marcus Brown, light heavyweight, get back in the ring, and he got his opponent out in the very first round. Did you happen to get a chance to see any of these fights?
Yeah. Good thing I didn't go to the bathroom in the Marcus Brown fight.
Had you really heard of Francie? I mean, I know, you know, this was a Marcus Brown showcase, but what did you think? I mean, evidently his opponent didn't put up too much of a fight, but did you see any improvement in Marcus Brown?
I mean, the thing is, that wasn't the initial opponent he's supposed to have been facing. This is basically a showcase fight, stay busy fight. You got to give it to him. He's been trying to stay busy lately. He's been on some undercards. I think the last card he was on was the one out in Nassau County in Long Island a couple months back. So he's just, you know, trying to keep his face relevant in front of the fans and staying busy. So, you know, hopefully we'll get to gauge where he's at in his next fight, because I think his next fight is going to be a very stiff opponent.
Yeah, I think that he's going to have to have another, like you said, this guy was a stand-in, but I think he's going to have to face some stiffer competition before they consider him a serious contender in the light heavyweight division. But the fight that turned out to be a slugfest, I mean, it wasn't pretty, but it was full of action. The heavyweight fight where we saw Kalinake knock out Kaladizi, I believe it was, in the sixth round. And this was like, a rock'em sock'em robot from start to finish. I know he's a prospect, but I think he's going to have to develop a different style and learn how to get some movement if he intends to advance in the heavyweight division, even on a minor level. What did you think about the heavyweight slugfest?
He made it harder than what he had to make it. He always is a crowd pleaser. He's local here from the area. And, he came in 20 pounds heavier than what he was in his last fight. You know, he said he went back to his country and, he was eating and enjoying himself. So it seems like it didn't affect his punch output because he still was letting his hands go. So, I just look at him as the new Chris Algieri. You know, he's going to always be in some tough fights and probably never be able to beat the upper echelon of the division, of the heavyweight division, you know, the Deontay Wilders, the Joshuas, the Tyson Furies, but he'll always be that test that guys will have before getting those type of fights.
I thought this undercard was pretty good up until Tuna fight, the Fortuna and Easter fight. I think if, as I was saying to Skelly, I think if Fortuna had made the weight, he actually might have won the fight. I'm not sure of the scoring. I had it a little bit closer. And except for possibly round, I actually had Fortuna winning the last three rounds. What did you think about the scoring? And do you think that Fortuna would be the champion if he had made weight?
I don't think the weight had anything to do with it. I just think the ref should have stopped the action and gave him a warning about that point deduction when he deducted the point, because in a sense Easter was like pulling his head down. It wasn't like the guy was like intentionally trying to go for the back of Easter's head. It was the way how Easter was pulling his head down and bending at the time when the guy was swinging. So if you do the math, remember all three cards have to deduct the point. So if you add that point, Fortuna actually wins the fight.
Yeah, I don't know. It was close. I will say that, but it didn't seem to me that Easter either just
forgot about his game plan, or he got so caught up and frustrated with Fortuna that he didn't really put on one of his best performances. I thought he looked more frustrated and more out of sorts for a champion. I thought a few times he lost his poise. And overall, I didn't think he had a championship performance. What did you think about Easter's performance, Jabron?
I mean, like I told you in the past shows, I haven't been thrilled with it. Now going on his last three performances when you count in this one. Remember I was talking about how he was giving up his height and his a lack of defense. And the only thing that I saw that any difference from the other fight, that he was trying to be more patient instead of just going straight in like he's done in the past. He was trying to be more patient and try to stay on the outside, but the problem was when you're that tall, you can't be just throwing one jab at a time, because as he learned, he was easily being countered. You know, you got that range, you got that length. He should have been doubling and tripling the jab to keeping Fortuna from countering, and change the trajectory and where you want to place that jab. It doesn't always have to be at his face, because then he could start timing you. Change it. Throw it to a solar plexus or to his stomach area, belly button, you know. Change it up, upstairs, downstairs, and, you know, and just start sticking your arm out. That's not going to do anything. Trying to, you know, use it as a range finder. That's not going to work when a guy is stepping around and countering you.
You've been very critical of Mr. Easter for quite some time. And now they're talking about, I guess it's mandatory being the winner of the Lula fight out here in at the Forum. But there have been some other interesting developments concerning Tank Davis and Billy Bibb. It seems that on January 3rd, the IBF ordered, I guess, an eliminator between Billy Bibb and Tank. And I guess since there wasn't a deal made, they submitted it for a purse bid. Let's see, I believe the date is January 29th. I mean, what do you think about the this bout between Billy Bibb and Gervonta, do you think it's going to take place? And, I mean, what do you think about the whole move by Gervonta as far as, I mean, do you think that this move helps his career by him? I mean, you know, I can't see how losing your title on the scale could help your career, but maybe, you know, it'll bring him back to the place he was before he won the title. What do you think about this possible matchup and Gervonta's future?
I mean, it's a fight that he has to take. I mean, I'm not so thrilled about the fight. I mean, Billy Bibb, I mean, but it's a fight that he has to fight to try to get his title back, which now seems like it possibly can end up being Tank versus Farmer for that title, because the gentleman that just beat Farmer tested positive last week post-fight. So now the title is vacant, and it seems Tevin Farmer will be first in line for the title, and Tank will be coming off the Eliminator.
Do you think, I mean, as we spoke of, you know, so many times, losing your title on the scale, do you think this would be a wake-up call for Tank?
I hope so. I hope it is. You know, I really sincerely deep, I hope it is a wake-up call, because it would suck just to see more talent thrown down the drain.
We all know about the Baltimore area and some of the things that a lot of the fighters have been through. Even when they've had success, they've managed to slip back into their old ways, and it has been very detrimental. I wish Mr. Ford and his team well in getting Tank back on that championship trail. There was another statement that was made that I'd like to get your opinion on. This was Mr. Anthony Joshua saying that he may never fight in the U.S. He doesn't really think that, it'll hurt his career if he doesn't fight in the U.S., considering, the following that he has in his native England, along with the rest of the British Isles and most of Europe. We haven't seen a lot of fighters, especially heavyweights, be able to have a successful career without some type of U.S. connection, whether it be a trainer such as Emmanuel Stewart or Sugar Hill. We thought that when Eddie Hearn decided to start signing fighters and bringing them to the U.S., we kind of thought that Joshua would be part of this package. Are you surprised that Joshua is not even contemplating fighting over here in the U.S.?
I'm not surprised. I agree and disagree with his statements. The part that I agree with is that he don't have to fight in the U.S. to have a successful career. But I feel to stamp on his career, to make it a legendary career, I think it would be good to fight in the USA. I mean, if you just look at the history, all the great fighters in the past done made their way over to the U.S., and put a stamp on it. You know, Hatton came over with, 12,000 fans. You know, Lennox Lewis came over. You know, Carl Froch came over. You got Amir Khan came over. So, that's about growing your brand. Like, he's signed with Beat. Beats is based out of the United States. So you're going to tell me you're going to have some type of marketing tool and you're not going to come to that country where that's where it's marketed at? I mean, it's marketed all over the world, but it's based out of the U.S. So you don't think for certain events and things they're going to have him over here? So why not fight and grow your brand?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me, but, business, and that, as we spoke of, even we were speaking of some of the women's purses, and how, I mean, fighting for euros versus fighting for dollars, the pound versus the dollar. I mean, you know, these are all kind of things that when you think of the business end, would have to come into play. I mean, when you speak of filling up a venue, they know that they can fill up almost any venue in Europe. I mean, it almost becomes secondary, especially when you consider the travel and where, I mean, other than maybe Jerry's World or some venue of that type, possibly the new Las Vegas venue, or even the D.C. Venue. I mean, right now, I think there are very few venues that could handle that type of a crowd. But I do think we were kind of duped by Eddie Hearns when we thought that this would be an open path to Anthony Joshua. Speaking of devastating developments, I thought the fight between Errol Spence and Lamont Peterson, while I kind of view it as a changing of the guard, I thought it was a valiant effort, but Barry, being the father figure, I definitely saw that he wanted to save Lamont, basically save Lamont from himself. I'm not really sure. Even though I believe he could drop down in weight and possibly contend maybe another couple years, I'm not sure if he should take any more punishment. Lamont Peterson really doesn't have anything else to prove. And other than strictly for the financial gain, I think his career has been very successful. Two-time world champion. He just gave up a belt in order to move up to fight Errol Spence. So I really think that maybe it's time for him to take a long look and evaluate exactly what he wants to do in 2018. And I'm kind of glad that Barry stopped the fight when he did. I don't think that there was any change, anything that was going to change the fight. It was kind of evident that Lamont really lacked the power to stop the young bull from coming forward. So I was very glad that Barry stopped the fight, but that's only because of my personal connection with them and them with the show. What did you think about the stoppage, Jamron?
I mean, I thought it was right on time. I mean, he was saving him. saving his career, saving his future. But on the fight, I just was, man, my heart just goes out to Lamont because I know he's a better fighter than that. I just hated to see the, not saying that they told him to do that, but Lamont executing that type of game plan. I just didn't understand why he wasn't using his athleticism straight out the gate. If he would have fought him the way he fought Danny Garcia, coming out, using his movement, using angles, then that would have been able to frustrate Earl possibly. But you going there with those earmuffs, just walking forward, like, I didn't understand that plan.
I thought it was, you know, when he kept telling him, you know, like, hold the phone, you know what I mean? I thought that was, like you said, I mean, I thought he should have used the earlier rounds to establish some movement. But once he started getting hit with the body shots, I don't know if the 33-year-old body responded as he went. But I did think that the game plan was rather flawed especially for Barry. Usually Barry has a very good game plan, and sometimes, you know, Lamont will get in there and the gladiator and him will try something else. But I definitely have to go along with you. What do you see as Lamont's future? Should he go back down?
It's not the way. He just fought a more superior fighter. Trust me, Lamont can beat majority of the welterweights in the division. It's that he's in there with a superior fighter. You name me somebody who's lining up to fight Earl. I'll wait. Exactly. So it's not so much Lamont. It's Earl is special. He's the truth. Like they say, the boy is special. You know, if you look at Earl compared to Thurman, right? Not taking nothing away from Thurman. He's a champion, two belt holding champion right now. But if you notice, Thurman, when he was a contender, he was looking explosive. He was one time. When it came to stepping up levels of competition, every level he started going up, there was no more one time. It was 12-round fights. He wasn't knocking nobody out or really knocking nobody down. And he hasn't since he's stepped up his level of competition. Now, you look at Earl. Every test he stepped up, he's knocking people out. You know, Bundu, that was a test for him. Somebody, it took Keith Thurman 12 long rounds to beat. Earl went in there and got rid of him in what, like four rounds, got him out of there. He destroyed Chris Algieri. And went in there, went to this man's backyard, homeland, as in Kell Brook, another country, as the underdog, and took this guy's belt, made him quit. You didn't see anything change from him being a contender to being a champion. You ain't see, once he went up in level competition, oh, he wasn't stopping guys or hurting guys anymore. No. The same thing with Triple G. Once you saw the level of competition go up, you didn't see the same Triple G anymore. So that's why Earl is special.
And being as young as he is, I mean, you know, you could see him going 2, 3, 4 weight classes.
Speaking of that, shout out to Fight Hub. You can go to their YouTube or go to their website and check out the interview post-fight last night. as Errol Spence is exiting the Barclays Center, they was asking him about fighting other opponents besides opponents at 147, since nobody want to fight him. Who would he fight? He said, "I'll fight Canelo. Tell Oscar to call Al Heyman and get the fight done. He don't want that smoke." That's what Errol said. So check out the video. And Errol also said, "People don't know how much I walk around at, the weight that I walk around at. I can make 160.
And I definitely believe you. I believe, like I said, young youth, and there's no one, like you said, there's no one at 147 that really wants to challenge him. I would love to see that fight. I don't think Oscar is putting Earl on speed dial, though. I'm sorry to say.
Oh, no, they ain't ready to make that call. They don't want to make that call. They'd rather just go ahead and keep dealing with that Triple G situation right now. They don't want that young lion. They'd rather deal with that old guy, Triple G. Not saying that, you know, Triple G washed up, but if you're going to weigh your options, I would go for the older guy than this young, strong lion that's looking for something to prove. What's your thoughts on his comments after the fight pertaining to Sometime Thurman?
You know, I kind of thought that was coming up, that was coming. It seems, you know, as you said earlier, everybody's kind of caught on that same journey that one time is now many times. Or sometime you see Sean Porter calling him out. I had a show the other day honoring Boyd, and we had Sean and Boo Boo on, wishing him well, and Sean was you know, saying that he wants to hold out for Keith, but. It seems that the quietest voice is one Keith Thurman. Usually Keith is out there, you know, voicing his opinion and talking about lining them up. But Keith has seemed to be rather silent, especially the last half of 2017 and the beginning of 2018. So I'm not sure, you know, whether Keith has gotten fat off of reaping his rewards. And I'm kind of wondering what Keith Thurman we're going to see when he returns to the ring.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to come to fight. I mean, he's going to be the same Keith always, you know, hard on the line and everything, but I just don't like the change with his tone. Like, it'll be one thing if he's saying, like, "Look, I'm coming off an injury right now. I'm gonna have me a little warm up fight, and then I got my mandatory and Sean Porter. I passed those two fights." And win those two fights without any injuries, then I can't wait to see you, Earl. We could unify these titles, and I can be the undisputed champion. I don't hear that type of confidence coming from him. Like, I heard more confidence coming from Crawford talking about coming and wiping out the division than I heard from Thurman.
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, you know, I mean, the competition is getting much stiffer, you know, people seem to see a chink in his armor, and more people are starting to
called him out, then like you said, you don't really hear that confidence or anything else. I mean, even coming off an injury, you know, I mean, Sean was adamant about his performance. We can pick out two or three fighters that were coming off an injury in 2017 that came off with a bang.
Yeah, when Deontay came back from his in 16, he was talking about he was putting everybody on notice that he was coming and trying to unify the titles. And same thing with Sean Porter. Porter like, look, I'm waiting for it to heal, and after that, I'm right back at Thurman. I'm on his heels. You know, it's like everybody coming off injuries and ready to fight and talking a good game, and he coming off an injury not sounding too confident, man. It just, I don't know. You know, well, I want the don't duck me, son. You better not duck me, son. I want that Thurman.
you want Thurman with the ponytail talking trash.
Right. I want that.
Well,
I don't want the Thurman sitting on the Oceanside, Indian style, playing the flute and kumbaya. No, I want that one-time Thurman that was always trying to get at everybody.
I hear you, man. I hear you. Well, hey, man, let's cut this a little short. I just wanted to get the show back on the road. Hopefully we could have Layman back in next week. And, hey, man, you never know how much you guys really mean to me. And these shows, sometimes they're more than therapeutic, considering some of the things that we have to go through with family and in life. I just want to, I know I've said it before, and I say it to you guys after every show, but I really appreciate the time that we spend together. And thank you so much, Jabron, for all you did in 2017. And hopefully we can have a lot of these shows in 2018. So that's kind of my final thoughts for the evening. Glad to have you back, my man.
Same here. I appreciate the opportunity. And like I said, I missed the show last week. I listened to it. I just got to congratulate you, and you did a great job, and just for showing the love and compassion for our fellow soldiers and Americans. I know you're a vet also, and to get just that brotherhood and the community bringing everyone together. So shout outs to you, JK, for making that moment for that gentleman and sending him off on his way. And I'm Jabron Clemens. You can find me on Facebook at Facebook, JABRANCLEMON. Let them know where they can find you, JK.
Well, you can always find me on Twitter. You can find us on the Pugilist Corner. We always try to post things during the week about fighters, upcoming fights. Jabron, I know you always post something in Facebook and very knowledgeable about upcoming things, injuries and whatnot. So check out our Facebook page. You can also, as of the 1st of February, we will have our website back up and running, also known as thepugilistcorner.com. So look forward for us doing bigger things in 2018, and we appreciate our listeners. We appreciate everything that you do for us as far as taking the time out to listen to our show, as well as the contributions you make on our Facebook pages. So thank you very much, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. Have a great night, everyone.